You are now listening to the Touchline Fracker podcast, presented by your host, Lewis.
Hello and welcome to another Touchline Fracker podcast. On today's show, we'll be discussing the inflation in the English market, as well as anything transfer related in the opening days of this transfer window. So without further ado, let me introduce today's guests. So today we're joined by Manchester United supporter Junior. How are you doing, Junior?
What's going on?
Arsenal fan Mickey. How are you doing, Mickey?
How are you doing, guys?
We have Palace fan Ruben. How are you doing, Ruben?
Hey, you're right, guys.
And another United fan, Elijah. How you doing, Elijah?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good, good. So, in the past few weeks, we've seen United go in for Luke Shaw for £30 million, whether you think that's crazy or not. That's up for debate. We've seen Adam Lallana join Liverpool for £25 million. So I think today we're going to be just discussing how and why there is so much inflation in the English market as opposed to the rest of Europe. So we'll start with you, Mickey. I mean, why do you believe that there is such an inflated market in English football?
I think it's a combination of reasons. I believe that firstly is the financial aspect. We are the most wealthy league in Europe. There's a more equality in terms of how the wealth is shared. So clubs, you know, they're willing to pay more, and they also, obviously the clubs receiving the bids are, you know, amping up the prices because they know that other teams have money. So that's the first factor. Second factor is with any time you have domestic players go from one team in the same country to another, chances are that they are going to go for a higher amount anyway, because there's the premium of those players being conditioned to the league that they're playing in, and also the unlikelihood of English players going abroad, but you pay extra for that too. So, for me, those are the two main reasons we tend to see bigger fees. But I think even then, it has to be proportionate to the talent. So I can understand why someone like Jordan Henderson at the time, I think he went for, was it 18 mil or 20?
I think 20 mil, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was in the 20s, right? Yeah, I can understand that because he showed a bit of potential when he was at Sunderland. And obviously he's going to Liverpool that have a decent amount of money. But you have a fixture like Andy Carroll that can't really be justified.
Mm.
So I can see why the outrage is there when you look at the players going for how much they go for. But if you actually look at all of the factors, someone like Luke Shaw moving makes absolute sense.
I think it's partly because of the hype the media like builds around them as well. Like, as soon as an English talent comes out, it's, he's going to be that guy for the next however many years, he's going to be X or Y. And I think that maybe plays a part in the selling club, maybe having more, I know, will to stand out for a higher fee, maybe. Like you saw how Southampton, like, they just weren't budging unless they got the money they wanted, essentially. And I think that's part of the, that's partly because of the media hype.
So, I mean, Junior, Junior and Elijah, you're United supporters. So, I mean, why do you think that Manchester United have chosen to spend £30 million on an 18-year-old left-back? I mean, whether that's good value for money or not, why have they chosen Luke Shaw as opposed to someone on the continent who maybe around the same age they could have got for maybe 3 or 4 times cheaper?
Well, I was talking about this earlier. I think it's partly because, I don't know, I thought there was a lack of options. Like, people were saying Daily Blind, but there's a whole risk with, if we're spending however many, I think it'll take like 10 million to get Daily Blind, and then he's maybe struggling with the pace of the league, we're struggling to adapt. Like, we'll have no backup right backs. Like, we'll have Evra, or sorry, left backs. Like, we'll have Evra, and I don't really want to see Evra touch pitch again, to be honest. And I think there's no risk of that with Luke Shaw not being able to cope with the pace of the league. And also, we're quite desperate. Like, yeah, that's essentially it, I think. Those are the main two reasons. We need someone, and we needed them quickly.
Mm. Okay, Ruben, it's been suggested that English players are somewhat of a premium commodity in football. I mean, what do you think of that statement?
Right, so do you mean like to have an English player on your team is a big advantage in England?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I guess that's true to an extent because it can only help the like team morale and if you've got a leader who's English as well, that's especially good. Like Chelsea with John Terry, they look a much better team when he's in a team, even if he's not as talented as, say, David Luiz, or it's debatable and stuff. But yeah, but I don't think that's the primary reason. I think it's more to do with the importance of the English player to their... well, if you look at Zaha when he was at Palace, he's a prime example of English clubs paying too much money for an English player because his performance last season doesn't justify his fee at all. But when he was at Palace, he was our most important player. So I think it's all to do with how important the player is to the smaller club who are selling. It's like the same with Lallana and Shaw. If they were coming from a bigger club, they wouldn't have cost so much. So I think that's why clubs will demand higher fees for English players, because they happen to be very important to the team.
Elijah, why do you feel as though... Well, do you feel as though English players are integral to a club setup?
I think they are, especially in defence. I think there's a stat that says without a regular star in defence that's English, I don't think a team's won the Premier League. So I think that it shows that having English players in your team is really important to winning the Premier League. And also the team that's dominated the Premier League for most of it is Man United, and they've had their team filled up with English players, and that's the whole ethos of the club to promote the best English players and to get them playing at one club. So I think it is important to have English players in your team.
Right. I mean, playing devil's advocate, I mean, we could say that, yes, fine, that was integral 5 to 10 years ago, even back to when the Premier League started. But, I mean, we've seen Manchester City come along and win two titles in 3 years?
Yeah.
And, I mean, their English contingent isn't exactly the strongest. I mean, so my question would be, are English players as valuable as they were 5, 10 years ago?
What I would say is you need players that are accustomed to the league, not just in terms of what happens on the pitch, but off the pitch, you know, it's the culture and lifestyle aspect. And, you know, you have players like Mickey Richards, Joe Hart, and yes, Mickey Richards may not play that much, but you still need those kind of players in your squad. James Milner. I think the one thing that you have to bear in mind if you're comparing it to Germany, France, Italy, Spain, is that England, we're more of a multicultural nation as it is anyway. So maybe in that sense, because especially obviously London as well, because you have that, maybe you don't need just... Because I'm a believer, it's not just about English players. You need players of that country. The spine of whatever team in any country needs to be of, they need to be, if you're in France, French, Germany, Dortmund and Bayern, German players everywhere, Spain, Spanish players everywhere, and the Spanish in Barcelona and Real Madrid. An exception with PSG, but that's just the fact that they more or less bought the whole, they more or less bought the whole fucking, every star player they bought. But in England, you still need the English contingent, but because I think our culture is slightly more multicultural, you can get away with someone like a Vincent Kompany coming into this country feeling at home, you know, French speakers, Spanish speakers, Italian speakers, you know, and it isn't so much
I think in any domestic league, you sort of need players who understand what being at that team is about. Like, and this may not necessarily be English players, but I think, or domestic players, but I think domestic players are more liable to, like, really understand what it is to be a Manchester United or an Arsenal or a Chelsea or a Man City player or whatever.
Yeah, I think you have to bear in mind that it goes even beyond the players. I think even the team itself, the way it sets up, the way it's run, it has to pay respect to the culture that it's playing in. You know, we talk, you know, we jest when we talk about with Barcelona, do what they do in, you know, would they dominate as much in England? And, you know, you wouldn't be wrong if you said no. And it's not because of the level of ability, but it's because the way they play is very Spanish. It's very, you know, it's not really compatible with the league. They may still win it, but they, and this is obviously Barcelona at Cantor, in their peak. You know, they still win it, you could say, but maybe not show the same level of dominance. And it's the same thing, you know, over here. You know, would our best team or would our league winners, would they go over to Spain and Germany and take the title? There's a genuine argument to any winner. So, to the league, I think it like beyond the players. I think it even goes beyond the club. You need to have a setup which still pays, you know, it still adheres to culture.
Okay, so
looking at the things.
Is there like, I mean, touching on what Junior said about English players understanding the game, understanding English football, understanding the club, you know, what it means to play for an English club. Ruben, do you feel there's like a presumptive a presumed loyalty that English players may give a club as opposed to some, you know, Spanish left-back who's going to come in and maybe stay for 2 years and then go back to Spain? Is that worth paying more for?
I think it exists. There is, like, if you see the common presumption among United fans is that Shaw will be their left-back for the next 12 years, which I can see happening because, like, most financially stable, like one of the most financially stable clubs in the country, like they'll probably get back in the top four straight away, etc. So that it's not like he's going to grow out of United, but there is that presumption, yeah, that that English players will have more loyalty because they'll fall in love with the club a bit more than foreign players will, and I guess if you bring in other foreign players, they're more likely to take transfers abroad because you never see English players going abroad. So, well, rarely. So if you buy a foreign player and then they get a better offer from a richer foreign club, they're more likely to take it than an English player would be. So, yeah, I think there is that presumption. Yeah, and it's kind of valid.
Yeah, like, remember, it's not just about what's the things that are happening on the pitch, just off the pitch. It's like, okay, you know, this player's got a family, all English, you know. But is he going to uproot his family to move to Italy, to Spain, to Germany, to France, you know.
So his options are limited on where he'll probably go. Yeah, so.
Exactly.
Yeah, and also if you get, like, a winger from, say, Portugal, he's more likely to have idols which play in foreign leagues than, say, Luke Shaw or Lallana or something.
Yeah, of course. All of these things, you know.
So I suppose there is a presumed loyalty that once you sign an English player, they're here to stay, they're here to be a legend at your club. And I suppose that does add value to any players. What about, I mean, now we have in England, that's something that's been introduced in over the last five or six years, is the capping restrictions that we have to have eight homegrown players. I know there's like loads of I know it's very vague and there's so many loopholes to get away around it. I mean, we've seen foreign players who have gained homegrown status, but does exactly, yeah, Fabregas, Gael Clichy is somehow a homegrown player. Does that cap then also add more weight to the to an English player's value? Because I know we have the same capping system in like other countries as well, but then that those countries like Spain, Germany, that the higher percentage of players and the higher proportion of players in those countries are actually homegrown players anyway, whereas it's different in this country. So you get more foreigners than British players in our league. So does that also add more to a player's value?
Yeah, it does. I think it does,
but not as much as the other reasons we've outlined. Like, at the end of the day, if you really want your player and it's an issue of you have to take this, but you have to get some random English kid from the youth team to fill up the spots, I think a team will take the risk. I think security in like longevity at the club is probably the biggest reason as opposed to that.
Right. But I mean, I'm just talking like, for example, Manchester City, we've seen them, you know, I don't really want to like say any conspiracy theories or anything like that. But I mean, the way they went about signing their English players like Jack Rodwell, Scott Sinclair, Adam Johnson, who else, sorry?
Richard Wright.
All these players, they spent, you know, quite a bit of money on. If you were the selling club, would you not hike up the value just because you know it's Man City and they're probably in desperate need of an English player just to fill their books?
Yeah, like that's the thing, people, you know, you have to include all these factors because you have to look on the knock-off effect of the homegrown rule. Because essentially, because our rule doesn't state that you have to be of that nationality to be homegrown, you get all these prodigious talents from all over the country, also all over the globe. You get them in, and these are guys that are on the level or above the level of the English youth players, you know, their counterparts. So what happens is when you have that English player that is going toe-to-toe with that foreigner, that hikes up his value anyway, because, like, that's a rarity. You know, it's perceived as a rarity for some reason. So that helps the situation in terms of the teams that are receiving the money. It's like, okay, you've got this left-back from France, fine. I've got Luke Shaw, who isn't any better than him. But because he's on his level, and because there's not that many English left-backs of that quality, even if you look at it contextually, his quality isn't that much higher of other youngsters, young left-backs in the world, then I can charge you 30 mil for him.
Mm.
So, at the end of the day, we could talk about inflation, but the money that the Premier League clubs receive is just getting higher and higher. So, my personal reasoning is, if the spending goes beyond sustainability, if it starts affecting that, then that's the issue. When you can't afford to pay employees, footballers, you know, if these funds ain't allocated appropriately, then it becomes a problem. And it's also the fact that when you use the money as a crutch, you know, if it's, there's no point talking about that, you know, there are benefits of actually coaching young players that are from your youth team or English. There's benefits that are long term, but a lot of Premier League clubs have a short term mentality when it comes to this. So, you know, they spend their money and they want surefire results. And that's a flaw. So you can look at it as a strength, or it's a flaw in our system.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, often the quick fire thing is to go out to Europe and get a like a ready made player and spend 20 million on him, or 15 million or whatever it may be. But I mean, just going back to the English players, do you think it would make a difference if we had? If we had more English players in the game playing at the top level who actually were good enough to play for the top Premier League teams, do you think we would see a decrease or an increase in the inflation of those transfers? So, for example, if we had more Jordan Hendersons performing well for smaller teams like Sunderland, Swansea, rather than just maybe him or Joe Allen, if we had maybe 10 of those, do you think Jordan Henderson would have gone for 20 million at that time, or do you think?
I think we see a decrease.
Of course, because you have to, like I said,
you know, the basic number one rule in finance is, you know, the more scarce a resource is, the more valuable it is. Yeah. So, like I said, you know, because there's this perception that there's not that many English players of that quality, then of course again it's going to drive up the market. That's the number one reason English players cost so much. So, if you go abroad, because the way their system, it's not any better, it's not any worse, but because in Spain, in Germany, in Italy, they don't have the money where they can just buy, they can outsource. They have to create their own. It's like Pep said, you know, you guys are going crazy over Wilshere. We have 10 Wilshires. Now, it doesn't mean they're all going to be as good as him, but we have 10 players of good enough quality of that profile.
Mm.
So, you know, I don't think Thiago's better than Wilshere as a player, but if Wilshere were to move to Man City or to Chelsea, it would probably cost more than Thiago.
Yeah.
You know? And that's the point, because even though as good as Thiago is, you've got Sampa, you've got Ander Herrera. If you look at players, obviously, of his profile, that type of player, of his age, you've got Ander Herrera, you've got Sampa, you've got...
Yara Mendy as well.
You've got Yara Mendy, you've got Isco, you've got all of these great midfielders. So, okay, obviously he's playing for the top team, but let's say he was playing for yeah, or Bilbao. You know, they wouldn't cost him that much to go to Barcelona. It wouldn't cost that much.
Mm.
You know, the fact that a guy like Isco, how much did Isco go for? Was it mid-20s?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Now imagine if he was English. How much would Isco go?
Oh,
go for to a top team.
Well, like 50.
But for Isco, yeah, of course, see it, well. So that's the thing.
Does that have anything to do with like the parity and the difference in financial powers?
Yeah, there's everything to do. It goes back to what I was saying. It's because those other nations, they don't rely on their money because they don't have it in their markets, in their league. So they can't rely on, you know, outsourcing because they don't have the funds to do so. So what they're essentially doing is they're creating these players. You know, our focus is on the coaching. Whilst with us, you know, because we have that disposable income, and it's very much a business mindset in the sense of, okay, instead of wasting our time or that possible risk of wasting our time coaching these players, I'm just going to buy a highly sought after player from some academy in France. I'm going to go and get me a Paul Pogba. I'm going to go and get me, a John Guay to go to Manchester City. I'm going to go and get a Cesc Fabregas. You know, because Arsenal, because as much as we're heralded for our youth development, we've only really bought in Jack Wilshere.
In terms of
literally a junior gun up to the first team.
Right, so, you're not going to count Kieran Gibbs, Nick?
Sorry?
No Kieran Gibbs?
Kieran Gibbs, oh yeah. Well, he's an academy product. He's an academy product still, but you get my gist.
Yeah,
essentially,
yeah.
You know, even most of our academy players,
they're poached from other teams.
We've got from other teams. AFC Wimbledon, in terms of Kieran Gibbs, I don't know. Is it Warsaw, one of the Warsaw teams, or in Poland, Augusta Chesney?
Yeah, we got him from Poland.
Yeah, so that's my point. Teams and clubs in England, they'd rather do that. They'd rather waste their money and not risk time wasted. And obviously, there's because there is a reasonable argument to say that, technically speaking, foreign players are better than English players.
Mm.
And there's a cultural aspect to it. Our English players, outside of football, they're different kinds of young men in terms of the way they apply themselves. That's not to say English players aren't hardworking, but if you were to compare your average young English academy player to your average young academy player from, you know, mainland Europe, there is a different profile in terms of like their mental application. So you have that too to bear in mind. So there's a genuine reason as to why they go after players in Europe. And essentially, you know, there's less emphasis on the coaching over here because of that. So when you do get that special English player that comes through and actually makes it, you know, they're perceived as... Sorry?
They cost more, they're more valuable.
Of course.
Mm.
So it makes perfect, like, for me, it makes absolutely perfect sense. It's a flawed system. You know, there's this, it's this benefits, don't get me wrong. There are benefits to it because I'm not too sure if you're familiar with the EPPP? Elite Player Program Development Assignment. I don't know. I can't remember.
What, the tribunal system? Is that what we're talking about?
No, not the tribunal system.
It's the Elite Player Performance Plan.
That's it, yeah. Obviously, basically, it's a model into how youth academies are meant to obviously run their academies, and you've got different tiers. Top teams are tier one, and obviously goes down to tier two, tier three, tier four. Now, you could say because so much of this money is getting invested in terms of top team players, it all goes towards academy. So what you may find, if clubs are smart, Southampton being one of them, okay, we'll sell all these players off, and then we just reinvest it. You know, better technology, better facilities, hire more coaches so players get more contact time, and get specialist coaches as well, more full time staff. And the way you can look at it is, okay, if I sell Adam Lallana, Oxlade Chamberlain, Theo Walcott, Gareth Bale, Luke Shaw for in total upwards of 100 mil, right, in the last 10 years, 100 mil, essentially I could use a quarter of that, reinvest it in my facilities, my youth, you know, in the academy, and because I've got that kind of capital, financially, we're not reliant on player sales down the line because we've kind of invested long term. And that means that if a rival team, what from Manchester United, come in for Luke Shaw or Adam Lallana come in for Adam Lallana, we're in a position to say we want X amount. You're not going to drive the bargain down because they started their program a decade ago. Because even people talk about them having all this money now. Southampton were a reasonably wealthy club before all of these sales. So, you know, is it necessarily a bad thing? I think it depends on what side of the spectrum you sit on. If your priority is the national game, is producing plays for England, then there's a problem in terms of the clubs, how they finance themselves. That's why there's such a parity between the Bayern Munichs and the Dortmunds and the rest of the German league. They're well-run clubs, but, you know, the amount of money available to all the teams is crazy compared to Bayern Munich and Dortmund. Same thing in Spain. So, there's the way we run our football here in this country, it's in the interest of the league. But in other countries, it's interested in the national game.
I think in England we have the FA and then we have the Premier League, and they don't necessarily see eye to eye on the majority of the times. I mean,
yeah,
having two separate corporations.
I think it's not even just those. I think there's an extra body. I think it's in the PFA.
Sorry?
I think there's PFA too.
Yeah, yeah.
There's the people that handle like the TV stuff. There's the FA and then there's the actual Premier League.
Yeah.
So we have all of these bodies that kind of work whose interests don't align.
Yeah.
And what we're seeing is that, yeah, that's why when people talk about, Oxlade Chamberlain, Wilshere, these guys that don't play for under 3-1s, it's like, okay, well, you don't bring these guys into the senior squad. Who's playing in their place? Like, who's playing in their place? Who are you going to play? No. If I literally took away Sterling, Oxlade Chamberlain, Theo Walcott, like, basically all the players that can, like, 24 and below. Who are you playing? What English players are you playing ahead of those guys? Because I'll tell you what, our national team won't be better than Scotland or Wales.
that's true, to be fair. We'd still have Aaron Lennon playing, trying to get us to the World Cup.
Right, that's the absolute truth. James Milner will be one of the first things on the team sheet.
Yeah.
Cleverly.
Actually, young.
Ben Johnson was actually starting.
And, you know, people ask, why don't we let Spain do it? It's, you know, our setup is totally on the other end of the spectrum in comparison to the rest of the rest of Europe, because their setup is more, you know, primed towards the betterment of the Spanish game. So that's why they can afford to keep some of the best players in the world in their under 21 squad, which sounds ridiculous, but it's the truth.
Okay. Well, does anyone have any other points to add on before we jump ship to another topic and move on to some listeners' questions?
I have a point about the English fees.
Yeah, go on, Elijah.
Personally, I think a lot of people exaggerate it because I can, like, right now there's a player called Iturb. He plays for Hellas Verona. He's been there for one season. He was at Porto before and he didn't really do well.
The Colombian geezer.
Yeah, I think he's Colombian. And I think after one... No, I'm not talking about... Yeah, Iturb. And I think after one season, Juventus and Milan, they're looking to pay, like, 25 million for him.
Mm.
And, like, that happens a lot. You've seen... it happened with Marquinhos at Roma, too. Like, PSG paid 27.5 million for him after one good season at Roma. Even with Eric Lamella, it was two good seasons with Roma. Then Spurs bought him for 30 million. There's also Ramos and Balotelli before that. So I think, like, it does happen elsewhere in Europe, and I don't think a lot of people notice it as much.
Maybe. I mean, I don't really pay attention to, like, the foreign media. Obviously, I only pay attention to the English. Does anyone know if it's like a prevalent problem in those foreign countries as it is here? I mean, is it addressed by the media, or is it just seen as, you know, everyday business?
No.
Like I said, the structure of the game, structure of the game is different, and there isn't as much money. So yeah, because the best players from the, like I said, generally speaking, domestically speaking, the best players of that country, if they're moving to another club within that same league, they will go for more because of the culture aspect, because they're used to the league, because they're unlikely to go abroad.
Mm.
However, in terms of volume, there's no comparison.
Mm.
You know, that Marquinhos deal, you can't name more than five of those that have happened in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they're much more... they're unlikely to happen. And you got to also bear in mind who's buying outside of Lamella, because obviously that's still an English team that have, again, got the capital to do that. It's PSG. PSG can afford to do that. Monaco can afford to do that. But outside of those two French teams, you're never going to catch Marseille, Lyon, or Lille make any of those kind of buys. The player that you mentioned before that moved from Verona, what team is it? What team are buying the player?
Juventus and Milan.
Are they going to co-own him?
No. They're both firing him at the moment. Because apparently Liverpool were interested as well, but they said for 24 million that they weren't going to go for him. He's from Argentina. He's 21 years. Iturb.
Isn't he at the World Cup? He's at the World Cup, right?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think he's at the World Cup.
Is he not?
No.
Oh. Okay.
Fair enough.
Right, well, does anyone else have anything else to add on before we move on? No? Okay, then. Well, then, I guess what we'll do now is we'll get to some of the listeners' questions. Does anyone have any to get us started while I get into the Twitter account and get the ones that I've been sent in?
Let me check.
I've got one.
Yeah, go on, Junior.
It says, in your opinion, it's from Mo Shiwa _AFC. It says, in your opinions, are Liverpool better off with the 70 million or whatever the price Barca are going to pay, or Sanchez plus less money?
Sanchez plus less money.
Gotta be Sanchez plus less money.
Yeah, I think they would, but that's not. Well, I hope it's not going to happen anyway.
Because I think with Liverpool, the more money they have, the more likely they're going to waste it on like loads of different players, like Spurs.
Yeah, Yeah, also it avoids the whole, like, because if they take a massive lump sum and then try and spend it, all the clubs that are selling them players will be like, oh no, we want more money, because they know,
cause they know. They have it.
Yeah.
It's like last year with Bale, Levy spent all the money before he sold Bale. Like, it worked financially, but some of the front signings didn't work, but like, it was a good way of doing it financially. So.
Especially with like Barcelona being like this way with the transfer, like, even I've never, maybe not recently at least, I haven't seen negotiations where like literally their meetings are published on Sky. Like, they're talking about Suarez, they're talking about talking to FIFA about Suarez, like publicly.
Of course, FIFA are bending the rules of his ban so that he can go into a medical.
Yeah, so he can go and train with Barcelona. Yeah. So he can go and.
It's
take pictures.
It doesn't smell good, does it?
That's because Barcelona's a disgusting club.
Yeah,
Barcelona are a disgusting club. I've known this ever since Rome 2009. I've known this. Since Messi scored that header, I've known Barcelona are a disgusting
club. I just think from the boards, like with Rosell and that tax fraud thing. And even with Messi, I just
every club has done some sort of madness with their books.
Yeah, but Barcelona is like
Barcelona is just a regular thing, and also with the whole Fabregas thing.
The Fabregas thing was that made me feel ill. Every single season they came out publicly. Publicly.
I wonder if Barcelona had a player like Suarez, right? See the whole racist thing that Suarez went through? I wonder if Barcelona were the team that he played for at the time, and they backed him as much as Liverpool backed him. I wonder if people's reactions to Liverpool would be different to the reactions they give to Barcelona. Don't get me wrong, I don't think Barcelona
would be the club. What would you say people's reactions were to Liverpool?
Sorry?
What would you say people's reactions were to Liverpool?
I don't think people condemning, they weren't calling Liverpool like a racist or scummy team.
My family.
They weren't particularly pleasant, but I weren't seeing football fans calling Liverpool like a racist, scummy side. I remember calling them foolish and stupid to back him, but they weren't condemning them as a club.
But I think the Barcelona is kind of a history of, like, they have a history of this, like, they do it repeatedly.
I think they do nothing that different to what all big teams do. All big teams have done some sort of, I think the thing with Barcelona is, this is the difference with Barcelona. I think the recent dominance plays a part, and people don't like to see teams dominate for too long. I think there's a sense of hypocrisy that Barcelona have displayed with the whole more than a club, the whole thing, we don't have sponsors on our shirt, all of a sudden we have UNICEF, we have all kinds of teams. Yeah, exactly. That doesn't help. And this perceived arrogance, you know, they don't help themselves. But Chelsea have shown similar behaviour. Man City, because their success is somewhat inconsistent, a lot of what they do is kind of underhanded, but people don't really tar them with the same paintbrush. Arsenal, to an extent, have done things where you look at me like, okay, that's a bit scummy. Manchester United, PSG, Real Madrid.
I think
but it's alright, because Arsenal do it to Barcelona, so it's alright.
I think what happened with Barcelona was, like, back, like, 5 years ago, they were, like, the people's club, like, they were perceived to be flawless, at least. And then all of that's come crashing down in the space of a few years. And it's, like,
hilarious.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. What they were doing throughout the 90s was so much worse than what they're doing right now. The politics, the craziness that was going on during the 90s was so much worse. So, you know, you want to talk about scummy clubs, Real Madrid is the scummiest club on this earth. Like, there's nothing.
I hate Madrid more. Weren't they, like, started by General Franco, essentially?
They're funded by the government.
Yeah, like, Real Madrid they're literally built on scumminess. There's nothing more scummy than Real Madrid.
Yeah, I can agree with that, but I have a personal vendetta against Barcelona just because of the whole Fabregas thing. Like that.
Yeah, like no one just doesn't want to admit it. It's just like, to me, it's a personal thing. It's not, you know, add context to it. Like, people ask, there's no set of fans that hate
Barcelona-born and Arsenal fans, then, like, it makes sense why. But instead of saying, okay, they're just scummy in general, no, just say it's because they take the piss when it comes to buying our players.
Mm.
But they don't piss out of other clubs, and why is that? You know, there's only so much.
Are you trying to say we're very easy to take the piss out of?
Yeah, like, they do what they're supposed to do, because we take the piss out of other teams.
And to be fair, we've taken a piss out of them. We stole Fabregas from them. We stole was it Fran Merida we get from them as well? Bellerin, Torral.
But just even aside from Barcelona, out of smaller clubs, we flex our muscles when it comes to smaller clubs.
Mm.
So we're not on the same level as a Barcelona. So why shouldn't they? If you don't want them to take a piss, why don't we up our levels so they come to us with more respect? Like, the way we tried, even though legally there was nothing wrong with it, the whole £40 million plus a pound thing was so outrageous to me. It's like, you really took Liverpool for small boys. Like, you took a piss.
I don't agree, Nicky. I really don't agree.
What even happened with that, though? Was that a genuine bid, like?
Of course it was genuine.
That was a genuine bid.
That was a real bid.
Like, if Suarez and Arsenal took Liverpool to court, Liverpool would have been, you know, they would have had more leverage. Arsenal and Suarez would have had more leverage. So it wasn't unfounded, but my thing is...
What would you have rather them have done, Mickey?
I think they should have gone on with a more, like, a bid that just presented a bit more etiquette.
But I don't understand, why would you give them £1 million? Say, for example, £41 million sounds better, but... Why would you offer? Why would you just give £1 million away?
Because part of, in my opinion, part of bidding for a player is not just about his valuation; it's about cooperation. It's about making the negotiations as straightforward as possible.
But it should have been as straightforward as possible, because if it's any other club, they accept the deal.
But Liverpool don't want to be seen as having been held to ransom, like having been made to look like pricks. Like, of course, if you bid £40 million and a pound, they're gonna do everything in their power not to accept it.
But I think this is where the miscommunication lies, because I think Arsenal, I don't think Arsenal went in with any malice. To be fair, I just think that the clause was there, and they felt as though anything over the clause, and the bid has to be accepted. That's come out now that's not the case for whatever reason. I just don't understand why we would offer any more than we had to. We could have gone in with 40 million and a penny. It still would have counted. And I don't understand because it's been made a big deal out of it because it's Arsenal and Liverpool. But clauses get accepted every day. Clauses get accepted every day. Yeah, you can name a clause that's been activated within the last year, and that club has paid the clause. They haven't paid £1 million extra for business etiquette. It's only because it was over £40 million. That's what it makes it sound like. If it was just £40 million dead, then no one would be saying anything.
I think if Arsenal, they should have been. This is where I think Arsenal went wrong. They should have been 100% sure that would have stood without no kind of complications. And the fact, for me, it's almost as if the unwillingness to take it further illustrates an uncertainty about...
Oh, there's a complete shambles. They fucked it right up. They listened to the player's agent, and, you know... Hopefully they've learned, but...
That's my reasoning. But it just goes... Like, I just use that as an example to say that I think that they even... They did that to an extent because they felt like they could afford that on Liverpool, and we can do that with smaller clubs. Mm. We can go and be like, no, we're not going to pay any more than this. But a team of similar standing or higher, like, you're putting in work.
The thing is,
Barcelona are a team, one team. Like, Barcelona are a bigger team than we are.
Mm.
So I'm not saying it's right, but I'm saying, you know, it's a competitive industry, and the dominant organisation is going to have more leverage.
Mm.
So,
see, I asked a question. I mean, what we're essentially talking about there is doing something that's gentlemanly conduct. You know, doing something that, like, it's an unwritten code of football, essentially. And I asked that question on the Touchdown Fracas Twitter account today, and there doesn't seem to be many of these unwritten codes that do exist in the modern game. And I think it just shows
is that...
Is
that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I mean... I think it's a bad thing from a moral point of view, but then you got to realise that there's probably no morals left in football.
What unwritten laws do you feel should exist? Like, are the basic moral codes that should happen on a football pitch?
I think
personally speaking, malicious action should be punished more harshly than stupid actions.
Does that mean like two-fold challenges?
I think a two-fold challenges. I'll be more likely to ban a player that has a history of making silly challenges for 4 months than ban a player like Suarez for 4 months. I think that's an unwritten code that should be totally reversed. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. Especially if you play football. Like, I've played football at no more than a semi-professional level. And so I've never relied on it as a source of income or my way of living. And if a player were to, if he was, even though it's within the rules of the game to challenge, if he was doing it with malicious intention, that's for me, you're inciting violence. But there's this unwritten rule that when players do something that's kind of, it's not a footballing action, and it's outside the laws of the game, that some insane ban should be,
But I think there's all sorts of like pernickety rules with that as to like what FIFA can bring or the FA can bring up, as in like if the referee sees it or if the referee doesn't award X, then they can review it and give you a ban or whatever. I think that would require like a lot of work, but I understand what you mean that those are definitely more career threatening than just stupid incidents off the ball. But I can also understand why the FA would be more, or FIFA would be more likely to punish Suarez like that, because there's literally no way he was intending to gain an advantage in the game. Like, he wasn't trying to get the ball or anything and got carried away.
Like, no, that's fair enough. Completely off the ball. It should be given a ban, but that ban is, like I said, it's ridiculous, isn't it? Yeah, for me, I was using that as an example. I didn't want to focus on that too much. It's just, I just wanted to say that, yes, things that occur that outside are non-footballing actions and are outside of the game should be punished. But comparatively, if you look at footballing actions such as tackles that are overzealous and aggressive, they don't get punished anywhere near as close. I think another unwritten rule is the protection of goalkeepers as well.
Yeah.
Challenges that happen, like similar challenges that happen in different areas of the pitch, get punished differently. You know, there's certain challenges if they happened.
I think the same goes for challenges outside the box and in the penalty area as well. So yeah. I mean, for some free kicks that are given outside the area aren't given inside the penalty. But I know that's an old cliche, but I think that's like a.
That's true though.
Yeah, like you'll see someone getting like a free kick from a corner, like the defending team getting a free kick from a corner, but you know if it was the other way around, that would never be a penalty.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose they're not like unwritten codes as such, they're just...
They're kind of a safe way of refereeing.
Yeah.
So to avoid controversy, because if a referee gives a light penalty for pushing...
It kind of sets the precedent as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. But I think there should be more penalties given for sort of defenders committing fouls at corners, because it's kind of a cop-out for the referee to just pretend he didn't see it. But I think there is quite a lot of cynical fouling that goes on.
For me, I think long-term will only benefit the game. You know, for me, it's a similar scenario that you could have gone back 50 years. You know, there's a lot of challenges that were just not... challenge actual tackles, they didn't actually try to win the ball. But because they were seeing that, you know what, players were getting injured and whatnot, they had to amend that, and what it results in is better quality defending. And when you start, if you,
know, apply that principle to today's game. Instead of defenders tugging onto players or grappling players, no, actually, this is how you man mark on a set piece.
It's
not going to...
You'll only improve.
At first, you may see it benefit attackers more. However, eventually, coaches and players are going to have to actually work on the actual one-on-one defending. Right body position, anticipation.
I think the same sort of thing, principle applies to the NBA. I mean, I've noticed that, like, in the NBA, fouls are more likely to be given in today's game than they would have, say, 5-10 years ago. And, you know, it's kind of encouraging, like, a new style of defending and...
The thing. People were... there's a for and against argument, but I listen to and I watch a lot of reviews of, you know, games and stuff, and you always have pundits talking about, oh, back in my day, that wasn't been a foul and so on. But, like, the problem is, these modern players are actually defending. It's now an actual skill.
One thing I wanted to say...
To stop that.
Go on, Junior.
No, go on.
One thing I wanted to say, this on a slightly different topic there.
Yeah, go on.
Diving. I absolutely, I absolutely hate it. I can't remember which game it was, but Adrian Charles, I think it was Germany-Portugal, where Adrian Charles and Alan Shearer, I think, were talking about diving and play acting.
Well, is that after the Müller thing, was it?
Yeah, people talking about Robben as well. Like, I really don't think diving is that big a deal. I think...
Nor do I agree with you.
Yeah, like in any situation, like for instance, I remember Liverpool versus United this season. Vidic made some stupid lunging tackle. It didn't make contact with Sturridge, but Sturridge went down and obviously a pen was given. I did not blame Sturridge at all. I blamed Vidic because you can't.
But is he diving? Is Sturridge diving? That's the. There's a. I'm 50-50 about it.
I think that is a dive. Speaking as a referee.
Sturridge jumped over the leg from what I remember.
You can't blame Sturridge.
What about just falling over in the box?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
literally just falling over.
Isn't that cheating?
See that example that you use? I don't call that diving. For me, diving is more akin to play acting. If you're trying to evade the challenge when minimal contact was made, that's different. But if you're literally trying to deceive the officials, then for me it goes against the sport, it goes against the good of the game, and that's what I have a problem with. And I think people don't have to differentiate the two.
So what do you mean, like, just literally there was no challenge made, or the challenge made was far away and he just jumps over?
No, because there's minimal contact whilst the player's trying to evade the challenge, and there's minimal contact where none of that, that's not even going on,
right? So there was just where the player just jumps completely, he's just completely trying to deceive the referee.
No, not from like, it's not like a stationary position where you're just, I just kind of fall over.
Maybe
a challenge is made, but it's not particularly aggressive or just challenge. It's not a challenge where...
All right, so we'll bring it down.
Yeah.
I would blame him as a referee.
But even then, but that's my point. Like, even then, it's, you have to take into consideration the speed of the game as well. Obviously, these are professional referees and they go through... You know, probably an elite type of training, so they should be more able to kind of pick these things up. But again, my thing is there are certain challenges where the force isn't enough to bring a player down the way he goes down. But using your Sturridge and Vintage example, the force that Vintage used, if Sturridge were to have stayed up or to have let him, then
he would have gone down.
So.
Yeah, I understand what you mean, but I think those incidents are generally quite well. Like, I would probably agree with your definition of diving, but the diving that people generally talk about is more of the Sturridge Vidic one, like where it doesn't. It could have brought him down, but he just jumps over or something like that.
I suppose.
And like, oh, he should have stayed on his feet. Should have. I just don't agree with it at all.
Something that sort of links into what we were just talking about before and the diving situation is also like, so if someone goes down in the penalty area, why is that not a dive? If the referee hasn't given a penalty and he hasn't reprimanded him for diving.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, but you can put
I know you can have both. I know you can have both, but there's situations like where a player goes down and he hasn't been touched. The referee hasn't given a penalty.
The referee's just. Yeah. I reckon he's scared usually. Like, he doesn't want to cause controversy by getting them a yellow. He's not necessarily sure whether it was a dive or not, so he just cops out of it completely.
Yeah, I mean, but that's wrong.
It's wrong.
For me, I think it's up to footballing bodies to really step down on that, because these things will only improve the game. It's only going to improve players.
Yeah.
If players know, okay, do you know what, I can't do that.
Yeah.
Then defenders, for example, they will, you know, they'll be much more economical, or they'll be much more skilled. They will force them to improve their defending. If players know, okay, do you know what, there's a high likelihood that if it's not a foul, I'm going to get booked and I'm going to get unnecessary bookings, then they're going to work on their dribbling, they're going to work on their balance.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing, football bodies, you know, there's things like the offside trap. It does literally affect the way players are coached and how we develop their skill. So I personally don't see why there's such a hesitancy to kind of deal with these issues, personally speaking. I don't know if they do that just to kind of maintain the, the excitement.
I think one of the few players who could dive a lot but doesn't is Messi. Like, you see Di Maria's winning goal against Switzerland. In that run, Messi could have taken a couple of fouls and won a free kick, but he didn't, and I think he's quite unique in that way, because a lot of players, like, after Di Maria's goal, you see Shaqiri could have had a shot, but he took a foul from...
The edge of the box.
But I think that's partly to do with how good Messi is, and also his ridiculous balance.
Messi knows that he can tell.
He decided not to, and I don't blame him for that, because it was a bad challenge. So,
right, if that was Messi, but I don't think Messi would have gone down.
But you say that about Messi's ability, and I agree with you to an extent, but I've seen Messi play so often, and so many times there are these challenges that literally 99% of other players would have just been like, no, I want a foul, I want him to get booked. And even when he's lost the ball, he goes on to nick it again, because he actually wants to, you know, he's so focused on the game, he doesn't even want the set piece.
Yeah, I love that about him. I love that about him. Because I think a lot of it is, like, cognitive. It's decision-making. You know, like, he doesn't actually want to go down. A lot of players have it in their mentality, like, let's go down. I'm just going to go down, win a free kick. He doesn't have that mentality.
It's more with wingers. Like, as you were about to say, Robin, Neymar, they get hacked down quite a lot. So I think it's more in their instinct to go down on contact. As well as their mentality, like, oh, let's do everything, like, do everything in their ability to win, which would involve winning set pieces.
I think
diving is almost, well, not diving, but you see the way Robert goes down, like, under contact, he, like, flings his arms up, like, turns. I don't think that's premeditated. I think that's just part of his instinct now, almost. Just to try and win the free kick with a penalty.
All right, guys, I've got, like, Go on, Mickey.
No, just to go on to that, obviously going past just the free kicks, obviously with the actual filing now, I read some sort of statistic that said out of all the times periods players down, get treated for injury, only like a fraction of it was actually due to proper injuries. So there's that as well. You know, all of these guys in down and whatnot, buying time, a lot of it is, you know, deceiving the ref, it's a tactical thing, and that's something that doesn't really get looked at. So
you're trying to get other players red carded as well.
Yeah.
Alright, guys, let's move on to some more listeners' questions. I've got one here from Trial and Error. He asks, should Spurs buy or stick this season?
Stick.
Of course they should stick.
Yeah,
they need to improve a couple of areas.
I think you can spend 100 million, go into the next transfer window, and then go, let's buy again. Goodbye, last transfer window signings.
But I mean, is there an argument to be made that just have a clear out and start again?
I think they can just sell them and start again, because literally in nearly every one of the players they bought, their market value would have gone down. And also, I think they haven't got the best out of players they could get the best out of, really, especially Lamela.
Right, yeah. I think that's what it probably comes down to. I mean, if the new coach has come in, and Pochettino's come in and he's just said, like, you know, I can work with these players. I mean, do you think that would have been a deciding factor in Pochettino coming to it? That, yeah, I can work with these players. I don't want a mass clear out and, you know, just cut our losses sort of thing. Because that could easily have happened.
I think the only two positions they really need to buy, like, if maybe sell Soldado and get a proper striker.
Would that be something you'd do, Ruben? Get rid of Soldado?
Yeah, I don't think he's a terrible player, but I don't think he can play on his own in England. Like, I think a Spanish team would happily pay 15 mil for him, and then they should move on. Maybe, like, try and loan in Lukaku or something.
I think he can play by himself in England. It just depends on how the team sets up.
Yeah,
the way they set up, they, you know, it was isolating the striker. It wasn't really working.
Yeah, maybe if they played Eriksen quite close to it.
But then people say this, but then I will see it in midfielders. Like, is that just like a confidence thing that originates from the system?
It probably is a confidence thing because he is a born finisher. Really, I don't know how he missed so many chances last season.
Yeah, like if there's
quite a lot of shots as well.
That you'd know Soldado for, it's about scoring. So yeah. For a player to have that drop off in a league that's of a similar quality, by the way, it's, you know, I would say personally speaking, it's more external factors that have been, you know, affected his his thought process and his confidence. I think it's too soon to sell Soldado. I wouldn't sell Soldado. I would add. Get one egg.
But not sell yet.
It depends on what they're looking for. It depends on what they're looking for, because, you know, if they keep it under by your, I think you're going to try and also under by your and Soldado and still push for a Champions League qualification. I think that's still good enough to achieve what they're looking for. For me,
yeah, they both look better when they're desperate. Together, so.
Yeah.
They need a left back.
It's their defence. Yeah, it's just their defence. I think they've got enough balance in midfield.
Their midfield is really good.
Two properly defensive midfielders, and they got Oxabox in Poli, like Reyes, Deacon, and Dembele. So they've covered all bases there. I guess they could do with a left winger. No, they got Chadli, haven't they? He's all right.
I think they could do with a bit more. Like I said, it all depends on their system. I think that's the main thing. It all depends on how they decide to play. Because in one system, they may want. Wingers like Lamela, like Chadli, like Sigurdsson. But in another system, they may want more direct ones. They may want wide players that run beyond the defence, which is what they don't have now. Because I think that's a problem that didn't help Soldado, is that none of the wide players create space for Soldado. You know, they were very compact the way they played last season. So, again, it all depends on their model, but I think they have enough there. Plus maybe three players tops.
Yeah, they just need a proper centre back and a new left back.
Oh god, yeah, left.
They were starting like Norton at centre back at times, weren't they?
They started.
That's crazy.
They started Kapu at centre back against Liverpool, didn't they?
Might as well get Asuka Collins back. Jesus.
It's like Kosuwe Vertonghen that left back, wasn't it? Ridiculous.
It was ridiculous, man.
God. Yeah. Guys, any other questions before we wrap things up?
Question is, do you think England could ever produce a player like Neymar, Messi, and Ronaldo?
They have the potential to, but they won't.
I think those players like that will get pigeonholed, like at a young age, and their creativity will be limited. So no.
Yeah, they get marginalised. Yeah. From a technical point of view, we can. But once they get to the point where they need to be playing and the level they're playing at, things are going to take. They'll be marginalised. Guys like Ravel Morrison, Joe Cole, you know, these type of players in other leagues would be the fulcrum. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's not necessarily a bad thing that we don't do it. It just means that the process that we use
Mickey, why do you say it's not a bad thing that we don't produce players like Neymar?
Because we produce a different type of top-quality players, I guess.
Because the thing is, right, if you look at Brazil, right, if you look at Argentina, you can even use it with Holland, and I explain for what I mean. That when if you produce this type of player, it's not only just producing, but it's giving them a real chance at first-team level, at football, at competitive level. You have to accommodate to an extent. So if you look at Brazil currently, in order for Neymar to shine, they have to play a certain way, which takes away from the likes of Sandro, who Sandro for me is literally the best Brazilian defensive midfielder. Guys like Hernandez, you know, Bernard, Lucas Moura. So essentially, you have to accommodate for that at the detriment to the other areas on the pitch.
Mm. Rather than being more balanced.
Right. Exactly. Well, I think the more European style of play, currently, now, all of our, may not have a player of that quality by himself, however, the quality and the technique is spread throughout. So, you have that. Now, for me, it's not so much a question of quality, it's more about the type of quality. Neymar's quality is very individualistic. But the problem with that is you may become reliant on that. Argentina have the same problem. Yes, we can create Agüeros, Tevez's, Messi's, Agüeros, so on and so on. But that same level of player isn't apparent in their goalkeepers and their defenders, even in their midfield to a certain extent. Same thing when it comes to, even Spain. You can use Spain, as crazy as that sounds, because they're focused on making this one type of player when they need to play a different football, to mix it up, to vary it, they struggle. They struggle to accommodate Yami Martinez. Yami Martinez, just when they think he's so much more different than the other type of players that they have, he should have been used much more. He should have much more prominent fixture in the Spanish team. So I think what the argument is, what the debate is, when it's obviously taking it back to England playing or producing this type of player is, would we rather specialise or would we rather have a more universal philosophy when it comes to creating a player? Would we rather specialise and really make these kinds? Because I think if you actually talk to a lot of coaches that are in the academy system right now, what they'll tell you is that now English football is so focused on, creating passes. We're so focused on creating passes and being attacking players. We're not really focused on creating great defensive players right now.
We need
ten right backs.
I think that comes from a little bit of a copycat thing, like copying Spain in a way and Holland did from level one and went on about how they produced
Sterling. Yeah, we have Sterling, we have Wilshere, we have Barkley, Sturridge, we need to keep continuing making it, and we have Morrison. No one talks about, where's our next Thiago Silva? Where's our next David Luiz? Where's our next
John Terry, basically?
Yeah, so...
Chris Wally.
Again, that's the reason why I personally say that. That's why I personally say that it really does depend. Like, whatever philosophy you have when it comes to producing players, there's pros and cons to every approach. It's just how well you execute it.
Mm.
On that note, why is it you think Argentina looks so bad, basically, essentially?
I don't think they look particularly bad. I think they're playing teams where... I think they're a much more reactive team than people kind of realise. And what I mean reactive is Argentina at their best are better on the transition than on the break. But most teams, because of the quality that they have and because of the assumption that they're a team that likes to break teams down, they set up in very compact and narrow units. And that doesn't really suit Argentina. Argentina, like if you look at them throughout the qualifiers and over the last 2 years, they're very dangerous on the break. They're a counter-attacking team. They're built for counter.
incredible.
Which is something new for the Argentina.
Number eight.
I think something that annoys me in managers is when they see a problem in their team and then next time they just don't really set up any differently.
Yeah, I mean, what you could say is Sabella, for me, Argentina have, I wouldn't say they've struggled, but what they have, what they have faced is teams that are, for me, it's like if a team plays Atletico Madrid, and Atletico Madrid, it was their impetus to take the game to that team, it will look like Atletico is struggling because they're a team built to break. Same thing with Chelsea. Chelsea got teams versus the better, got points versus the better teams, but they struggle versus smaller teams because, when Mourinho made that shift in their system, they were a team built to break forward. So even if they were being smaller teams, it was narrowly. It was struggling for 60 minutes and then on Schürrle or banging a hat-trick or struggling for 60, 70 minutes and then Hazard would just nip a great goal. So I think it's something that you'll see versus Belgium. And if they go on to progress, you may even see it versus Holland or even the final. The better the teams they face, the better Argentina will look. I stand by that so firmly. Yeah.
So do you think who they're playing in the next round? I guess presumably Netherlands or Costa Rica if they make it through.
And I think Netherlands, that would be an interesting game.
I think Netherlands would win that. Not necessarily because they'll play like blind in football or anything, or they haven't been, but I think they sort of fit into the category of team you were talking about. They don't fit into that category of team, sorry. So they won't be going there trying to outplay Argentina, and they won't be attacking. They won't be allowing Argentina to
come outside, I think. But again, that's what I mean. Holland, I agree with you. I think it'll be two teams that are being pretty cautious. But the reason I would say Argentina are favourites is because I trust the Argentina attack to play better than the Dutch attack versus the Argentina defence. People were very worried about Argentina's defence. I think that's been the best part of their... Yeah, like for me, if you look at the midfield, their attack, their defence, their defenders have all been pretty good. They've been easily the best performance in the team so far.
Has anyone got any more listeners' questions before we quickly move on to, the rumour mill and we can say yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, 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 yes?
I've got one that's sort of rumour-related.
Yeah, go on.
One second, sorry. It's sad. Where do you think the likeliest destination is for Khedira, Di Maria, Sanchez and Vidal? So they don't have to, it doesn't have to be a different club, but yeah.
I think Sanchez is going to Arsenal. Vidal, I think he's going to end up staying. What were the other two?
Di Maria and Khedira.
I think Khedira will stay.
I don't know what's happening with Khedira. I guess it depends on who else Real Madrid buy or get rid of. And Di Maria, in Jesus' name, he's coming to United, but I doubt it, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't really see Di Maria and Khedira moving unless Real Madrid bring in some spectacular signings like Kroos. But he's a completely different player to Khedira. So,
yeah. You wouldn't necessarily mean that Khedira's leaving.
Yeah. Sanchez, Arsenal more likely than... Although, swap deals don't often happen, but I think Liverpool's bargaining tool with Suarez could be very useful, but... I think
Sanchez is just saying no. I don't.
Yeah, would rather join Arsenal personally.
Don't tell Liverpool fans that. They still think that's a load of bullshit. Even though about a million people, even though about a million people have reported.
They still think he's really mad.
I had a discussion earlier. It was a pretty short discussion because it wasn't something worth arguing. Where they were like, "What's so great about Arsenal that Sanchez would prefer to go to Arsenal than Liverpool?" And
well, London number one.
I think Arsenal is a bigger draw of players. at Liverpool, but I don't think it's necessarily a real, real massive gap. I think there's small. I think it's more to do with non-footballing reasons than footballing reasons. That's why people refer to it as Arsenal. But Liverpool fans, they want to hear that as well. So.
All right, guys. What we'll do is I'm going to go through like a, well, we've done the main ones there, but what other rumours are there that going around? Is Pogba staying at Juventus?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think they'd let him go for anything less than sort of 55, 60 range, just because he's got that much potential. So yeah, I would say he's staying. I saw earlier QPR looking to nab Kulka away from.
Oh, that'd be a good signing.
Yeah, because they need youth in defence, because Dunn, Flint Hill, Ferdinand, all like 33 plus.
Yeah.
So, question. If a team were to go for James Rodriguez right now, how much do you think he would have to go for?
55 million.
55 upwards, yeah. Because how much did Monaco buy him for? 40?
45 million euros.
Yeah.
So I don't think that
he's not going cheap.
And you got, and also he's on like something like 200 and something grand a week tax free in over there, isn't he?
Yep.
That's
so
ridiculous.
I had guys, I'm not gonna name them, and I was happy to select his name before the Uruguay game. I was telling guys, he's going for nothing less than 60 million. Nothing less. And they were like, nah, 35, 40.
Oh no, I'll name and shame.
I don't think it's worth going for him now. Like, his price will be so. I think he's great.
I agree. But I was saying, for a top, the thing about, firstly, you would have to be a ridiculously rich club to even bid for him. Firstly, and Monaco off that alone would charge extortion fees on that alone. It wouldn't be worth it, but 60 mil, nothing less. Even then, I'm being generous. I think after the volley, I think I'm up to like 70.
Well, I think I saw an article today about Barcelona don't even want to offer 70 million. Yeah. Apparently, is it 48 million or something?
Apparently, Metro said it was about 52, didn't they? And 55, and Telegraph said it was 72.
And the Guardian said it was 72 too. Apparently, in Spain, they're saying that it's the furthest thing from reality that Barcelona would bid 72 million for Suarez.
Wow.
They actually don't rate Liverpool, you know. How can you announce, yeah, that you're talking to FIFA about Liverpool's player? That's ridiculous, man.
So, what, are we all in agreement that Suarez is actually going?
I think it's inevitable now.
Okay. What about Yaya Toure? Because there was a lot of speculation about that. Is that pretty much it?
Sorry,
no more, man. He's going. What about, yeah, go on.
His racism card is the most annoying thing ever, but yeah.
Mm. His agent is crazy.
What about.
His agent's on crack, bro. Yeah, his agent's on the birthday cake, bro.
What about Dejan Lovren, £20 million to Liverpool?
They're getting ripped off, but he would probably improve their defence.
Mm.
Yeah, I'd take Bosco any day.
Personally, I don't even think Lovren is that great. I think he just thrived in the defensive system that Southampton had. I think with Liverpool,
I personally love Lovren. No. I think
that in a more exposed system like Liverpool, say, where they have to split centre backs and more one-on-one defending, I don't think Lovren is as good.
Okay. In terms of one-on-ones, I don't think he's probably not even the best at Southampton, to be honest. In terms of one-on-ones, but I think in most other areas, he'd certainly be an upgrade on Skrtel.
Oh yeah, of course, because Skrtel's one of the worst defenders
I've ever seen.
We'll just pull you from corners for no reason.
Can't see goal scoring.
The guy's desperate to give away penalties.
It's ridiculous, man. He could easily give away like 10 penalties in one game.
Funniest thing, you know how people usually start like rating whoever it is just because of scoring goals?
Yeah.
Like, even when Colm was scoring goals, everyone was getting guessed. Like, even when Skrtel started scoring goals, no one thought he was a good centre back.
No one
changed their opinion.
Mm. Even with Vermaelen. So, rough.
Yeah, what about that, guys? Do you think Vermaelen's off?
Hopefully not.
Who said hopefully not?
I did.
You don't want Vermaelen, you cheeky
girl. No way. He looks great.
You should be so grateful.
I would rather have Michael Keane from the reserves, to be honest.
That is so disrespectful. I think Vermaelen's the best third choice centre back in the league.
Don't disagree. Don't do it to yourself.
Nicky, don't you think Vermaelen's good? Oh, okay.
Yeah, finds out the best everything, you know. Best third choice centre back.
No, but I'm saying he could easily start from.
Like, we're proud of him, but it just makes sense. It's just like, if everyone's first, one of their first choice centre backs got injured right now, who would be better than Vermaelen?
The silence says it all.
No,
that don't count, man. Because Vidic would be number one, man.
I don't think United can cope next season with Evans, Smalling and Jones. Just if Vidic and Fernando both off, they need a centre back. Yeah, like, obviously they're better than Vermaelen available, but for 11 mil it's not a bad signing, especially if Van Gaal wants to play a back three, because then a left footed centre back will come in handy.
I think they're not going to play a back three.
I don't think it suits the league.
I just think it's a case of just the way the players that Man United have might not shoot to that. Secondly, they don't have the tactical education that Dutch players have. Dutch players can play any formation. Like, that's just the way they're developed. So Van Gaal just took advantage of that. But what I would say about the centre backs that they do want is you have Man United, their centre backs, or three of them, or two of them, you could say, are defensive partners. Evans, I'm not too sure if he's a defensive leader. The centre back that they sign has to be a defender that takes charge of the back line. And if you buy Vermaelen, then you're just buying another partner. You're not buying anyone that leads the back line. So,
yeah.
Wait, why was he even your captain?
Well, it's difficult to say. But he's got good leadership skills. You can kind of see the way he carries himself on the pitch. But it's the same reason people confuse Martin being vice captain. But if you look at what they do off the pitch, it makes sense. And it's difficult to read the body language, or it's difficult to read how players respond to different players. So certain players may not look a particular way when you see them on a Saturday or a Sunday, but Monday to Thursday, off the pitch, on the training ground, they can be leaders. So, there's that.
I think Evans Smalling is our best centre-back pairing. Like, even last season
when we had Vidic and Fernandes. Yeah.
Both good players.
They're both good players. I just don't know. I don't see a real leader in either of them.
Personally, I think Evans has the potential to be a leader, but he's the one right now.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Guys, what do we think about Romelu Lukaku's future?
Apparently he's going to Atletico Madrid on loan.
Really? I thought they just agreed to do with Mandzukic.
No, apparently they're going to get Lukaku and McGregor.
Oh, no. That's not bad.
I don't see Lukaku's future at Chelsea. That's what I don't think they're patient enough. They'll send him out on loan maybe once more, maybe twice, and then they'll sell him for about 20 mil to a club who's more keen on bringing up younger players, and they'll stick with Costa for a while, and then they'll splash out on another striker, which they'll never ruin.
Ruben,
Lukaku
is I think last
I think people are kind of unfair on him because, like, when you see a player, you have to. Okay, I watched Everton quite a bit last season, and so I knew what to expect from Lukaku. But in the World Cup, people were just like, "Oh, you see Lukaku? He's basically shite. Like, he's got nothing. He's providing nothing." I think it's kind of unfair because each player provides something separate, and in certain systems that won't be.
I don't think Lukaku's rubbish. I just think from ever since I've seen him since like 16 and like an 18, I think he's just not built for the way that he's just not built for the striker that Chelsea needs. Because his first touch is not reliable. He's not. If the ball comes into him, he's not going to trap it first time. He's not going to link up with the smaller, more nimble players. And I don't think he's just suited to Chelsea.
For me, I just think it's ridiculous to write off a player at the age of 21 and who is obviously very hardworking and, you know, keeps himself in a good environment. I think it's ridiculous. Like, there's a lot of players in the workforce now that want to play that Lukaku is right now at the same age. So
from his interviews, though, it sounds like he's not willing to wait around, to be honest.
He's not willing to wait around, but he wants to play. And that's what he needs to be doing.
I think he needs to leave Chelsea.
Yes. For me, if he goes to the right team that play in the right way for him, then he will absolutely be beast.
Guys, is there any more transfer rumours you want to cover before we call it a night?
Cruz to Real Madrid.
Who?
Cruz to Real Madrid. Apparently, basically, he's deciding, quote-unquote deciding, after the World Cup. But it's essentially done, and it's like 25 million euros.
Yeah.
That's a bargain.
That is a...
Why are... Like a natural successor to Schweinsteiger. He's incredible. Why do they want to sell him?
Because it's not that they want to sell him. I think he's just not willing to sign again. Because they won't give him... Like, Rummenigge doesn't want to give him the wages. He doesn't want to be held to ransom, basically.
Yeah.
And in a bit of a standoff. So, he's just like, screw that.
And to be honest with Cruz, I think he's a good replacement for Alonso. Because he's not as... I don't think he's very good defensively. But I think in terms of passing-wise and in terms of his technique, I think his technique is ridiculously good. Like, the way he strikes the ball, he's just... Like,
his best asset, definitely. He's great. The judge needs a tackler next to him, though.
Yeah,
and I think he does a very similar job to what Modric does at Real Madrid.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think Cruz Modric will work.
I don't think it will work.
It could work.
up if you were doing Kroos, Modric in the middle?
I'd like to play four centre midfielders. Or four central centre midfielders.
It'd have to be like 4-2-3-1. They couldn't do that with... No, because if you put them together in a double pivot, there's no one who can like tackle, and they both want to go quite far forward. So,
well, Modric holds position, but
you'd want to play just together with a DM behind them, surely.
I would say for like, I think it works better. I'd work it better. I think it would be like a 4-4-2 diamond, where one of them, probably Kroos, will be deepest midfielder.
Yeah,
like a, you know, the number four. Modric is the number six, but the two players that they play ahead of him would have to be quite dynamic players. I'm not that great of a fan of Kroos behind as a number 10. I think just because a number 10 is clear.
Yeah.
Number 10, personally speaking.
I think Isco is the next is so good.
Yeah, for me, Isco as a number 10 is better.
So where does this leave Man United in terms of their central midfield? Because obviously I think Herrera is probably not going to be the only midfield addition in there. So
they need a defensive midfielder.
So yeah. Is that going to be Carvalho? Is that there's 35 million?
We're not good in 37 million for Carvalho.
Yeah,
absolutely.
De Jong is the best option to get, I think, at the moment.
Would he cost
around 10, maybe 15 million?
He'd miss most of the preseason, wouldn't he?
Yeah, but he's had a World Cup. And I don't know. I think he is one of the best value defensive midfielders that they could buy. He's played in the Prem before. He was very good at City. And he sort of exactly reason, what United need.
For some reason, he just doesn't seem like I would definitely go for it, but it seems like one of those fan targets as opposed to an actual target we have.
I don't think the club actually are interested. I think they should be. Like last season, yeah. I wrote an article about why they should get Luis Gustavo.
Fine,
like Fabregas and Thiago. And because Gustavo does sort of carry his job the better, can tackle, and he's more dynamic. And he'd be perfect, but not going to happen.
I still think a team should like have a look at Jan and Villa. I think I'll be interested. It'll be interesting to know whether he's kind of like dealt with all of these off the pitch issues.
Well, I think where's he in Russia?
He's in Russia right now. And, you know, I don't watch the Russian with any great interest, so I'm not going to pretend like I watch him a lot. But just knowing of his ability and what he was touted for, that there's still quite a player in it. He's still relatively young. I'm pretty sure he's not over 23. I think he's 23, 24.
Yeah, it's about that.
Apparently,
who reported that? Ben Fairphone?
Oh, no. This is.
Ben Fairphone is like a Jan and Villa fanboy.
Didn't he link him to Arsenal in 2011? Just kept leaving him.
Every single day.
I would have loved if he came to Arsenal.
I would have 2 years ago, but. I don't know about him anymore. Speaking of Arsenal then, Mickey, I mean, quickly before we wrap things up, Sanchez, enough?
Sanchez, I want an extra centre-forward, but I think we have that in Campbell. So as long as we've got Sanchez and Campbell, I would like to see that. Because again, I only want to see Sanchez as centre-forward, but I'm not 100% sure of him as centre-forward. I would like to get like a more natural striker in there. Obviously, we need a right back, so Debuchy's looking likely. Goalkeeper. Maybe we should have a look at Victor Valdez. That'd be interesting, but I think that would be stuck. We should change his number now, so maybe sign a bit more realistic. Centre back. I do want a proper centre back. But I guess maybe look at Jenkinson, but I don't know. I guess if we're looking at promoting Bellerin to the first team squad, we could have Jenkinson as a utility player, so he could play centre back and be the fourth guy. So that's possible. Schneiderlin or any defensive midfielder, please. But I just see just incredible numbers in terms of our centre midfield spots. So who's competing with Diaby, but I'll tell you for the meaning already. Jack Wilshere, Ramsey, obviously guaranteed spots there. And yeah, I think we're good.
Okay. So
goalkeeper on right back. Centre mid, striker, four signings, and we're good.
All right, guys. Well, I guess we'll leave it there then. We've gone quite overboard with the time. So, yeah, thanks for joining us. Thank you to my guests. And we'll see you next week. Ciao. Yeah.